Go ahead, lounge around in bed with a good magazine. We'll even read it to you. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Live. On Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Annis alongside Jeff Simmons and Dave Zarum this week. Fire up the chili. It's almost Super Bowl time. Super Bowl 50 right around the corner. We'll get to that in just a second. Blue Jays State of the Franchise, now called the leadoff event, actually went last week as well. Mark Shapiro, Ross Atkins introduced to season ticket holders. And the Raptors ramping up their playoff push, continuing their strong play in the Eastern Conference, creeping up on the Cleveland Cavaliers. NBA's trade deadline approaching, and the NBA world about to descend on Toronto for All-Star Weekend. All that and more coming up in the next couple of hours. But, gents, we do start with Super Bowl L. I'm the only guy calling it Super Bowl L because that's the Roman numeral.
I like it.
Yeah, did you know that, Dave?
No, but I learn something new every time I'm on this show.
Yeah, you do. I know. But that's only because you didn't know a lot. And it
certainly in the world of numbers and Roman numerals, dead yeah, on.
That's just a fact. All right, so Super Bowl 50 this weekend. We'll save our predictions to the end of the program. And 2 weeks to talk about one game is a lot of time. And when you have that much lag between football games, Jeff, I think you almost... You force yourself to see the other side of things. I would say 90% of the football world, and we'll get to. I know, Dave, you have a differing opinion on who's going to win this game, but I think most people, Jeff, all season long saw the NFC as the superior conference, the eventual Super Bowl champion coming out of that conference. They look at the way both the Panthers and the Broncos have played in the postseason, and it's hard for me to see the Broncos even competing in this game.
And that's totally understandable view. And the way Carolina's played in the playoffs has really opened a lot of eyes. And all year long, people kept wanting to doubt them. They really hadn't played that many good teams, and they were a product of a weak schedule. But the way they just ran through Seattle and Arizona, which by every measure were top five teams in the league, it's hard to see Denver holding up because on paper and by most metrics, Denver isn't as talented as Seattle or Arizona. Carolina they match up so well with Denver. And it's hard, even with the 2 weeks where I'm one of those people, I'm trying to kind of up the ways of how Denver can stay in the game, but there's just some real mismatches for Carolina.
It's almost like hoping that we're not seeing the Super Bowl of a couple of years ago where the Seahawks destroyed the Broncos. But Dave, I know you are one of the 10% that see it the other way.
Well, I just think there's a ton of value in a defense like the Broncos in a kind of single elimination game like this. I mean, if you look back, something like 40 of the last 45 teams in the Super Bowl who happened to be the best defense in the NFL, which the Broncos were this season, have gone on to win the Super Bowl. So, I mean, strictly just looking at the defense, I mean, there's a ton of history on the Broncos' side. Obviously, offensively, they are so far behind Carolina that it makes the kind of argument for them a lot more difficult to kind of seem legitimate to back the Broncos. But I really do think there's something in their defense. And, you know, they haven't faced a quarterback like Cam Newton a lot this season, someone who can rush like he has and has that kind of ability to disrupt defensive game plans. But if they even just kind of bug him a little bit, close to as much as they did against Tom Brady, disrupt his flow a little bit, then I think they have a chance. Like, I expect a fairly low-scoring game. Denver's going to rely on their defense, and I think, like I said, history's there, and I think they have an opportunity to win on the backs of that defense.
20-plus hits on Tom Brady last week.
Crazy.
But Cam Newton's not Tom Brady, Jeff.
I'll jump on Dave's point. If you pressure Cam Newton, he's a completely different player. His numbers against the pass rush and not against the pass rush are strikingly different.
Like, that's why I think that the Carolina offensive line is maybe the most important kind of aspect of deciding this game.
Yeah, that's huge. And the reason they've handled those teams so well is Carolina up front really handled Seattle and Arizona. That was kind of the game inside the game. They didn't get any pressure on Cam at all. He was just sitting back there a ton of time.
And those are two similar type of defenses, right, in terms of just the way they pressure you?
Yes, but none of them can pressure the quarterback like Denver. And the one time Carolina struggled and they did lose, Atlanta really got to the quarterback on the edge. And Denver has DeMarcus Ware. They have Von Miller. And their offensive line is built more from the interior. They're not great in the tackles. They signed Michael Orr off the street this year, and they haven't faced a guy like Von Miller all year.
Carolina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that defense, talking about Carolina's, has been really opportunistic. Now, it helps that Carson Palmer just turned into a tire fire in the postseason.
But, I mean, it's going to be just as easy for them this time around.
Well, is it? I mean, that's a good question, because say what we will about Peyton Manning, and the offensive numbers have been pretty atrocious. Did not throw an interception last week. He had plenty of opportunities to throw interceptions. He's not taking big chances, though, with the arm, right? Like, he's not looking deep downfield.
Yeah, that's the biggest difference I see in Manning. Obviously, he's had to change his game as the injuries add up and as his age adds up. But, yeah, you used to see him just – maybe it was a chemistry thing, like the way him and Marvin Harrison, and then later him and – I'm blanking.
Reggie Wayne?
Reggie Wayne, and even in Denver, Welker, yeah. Stokely.
Yeah. Or maybe it's, you know, the fact that he's 1,000 years old and has no neck.
Right, yeah. Well, pick your poison. He's not doing those. He's not having those giant kind of long bombs that we used to see him do so regularly and so accurately. And it changes it, because you can't break open a game like his teams used to be able to. I mean, they kind of slug it out and rely a lot on, like, C.J. Anderson to run the ball. And they're just not – there's just no, like, fire there. There's no life there in their passing game.
Well, and they did next to nothing offensively against the Patriots for, like, the last three quarters a couple of weeks ago. You would think they'd have to do something. You would think that the Panthers would be able to put some points on the board, but maybe not, considering we're talking about the top-ranked defense in the NFL. And if it is a low-scoring, tight game, at a certain point, do you not defer to the experience, to the guy who's been in, now this being his fourth Super Bowl, has won one? Say what you will about Cam Newton, and yes, he's not totally green when it comes to the postseason. He's been to the postseason. He's never been in a Super Bowl before. Seems to have the mental makeup to not crumble under the pressure.
He's been on that national championship stage in college,
yeah,
and
for sure, excelled. which is you know, almost as big as the Super Bowl, frankly. But if it is a close game, I mean, the Broncos have experience in close, tight games as well. They've done really, really well. Like, they don't blow anybody out. If there's going to be a blowout, you would think it would be the in favor of the Panthers. No. But if it's in a close game, that does favor the Broncos, you would think.
Well, and that's why I like the Broncos' chances more than most. You know, that's why, I guess, like you said, I'm in that 10%.
Plus, you're a contrarian.
Well, that too, because it's no fun if everyone loves the Panthers. But yeah, it's because, you know, I do expect it to be that close game, and as you get closer and closer, the defense becomes more important. That's where the Broncos still do have the edge.
But Carolina has a great defense, too.
That's a good point. They do. Yeah.
That's the thing that no one seems to be talking about.
But it's not as good.
It's not as good, but they're better at forcing turnovers. They're incredible up the middle. And that's the one thing in this matchup. If there's one place you can exploit Denver, it's the interior of their offensive line. And the way Carolina rushes up the middle with Kawan Short, their defensive tackle, and Luke Kuechly, who's got two pick sixes in the playoffs, they're forcing these turnovers because they're making these quarterbacks uncomfortable. You get Peyton Manning on the move, and you get force him under pressure. He's got a propensity for turnovers, and I don't.
But he hasn't really done it recently. He hasn't turned the ball over. Like I said, he didn't throw a pick last week.
No, but you haven't seen a middle of a defense like this in the AFC playoffs. That's the big difference,
right? But one of his greatest strengths, right, is being able to see where the rush is coming from, to audible out of plays where he thinks he's going to be in trouble, yeah. to get into running plays that, you know, maybe not picking up a ton of yards, but he's not going to take sacks, you would think, because he understands NFL defenses better than anybody. Plus, he's not throwing deep downfield that often, so he's not hanging in the pocket that long.
No, but the difference with these kind of players, and I mentioned Short already, these guys are game wreckers or play wreckers. They get into the backfield so quickly, it almost doesn't matter. And you saw it against Carson Palmer, and you saw it against Russell Wilson, who's one of the more elusive players.
In the first half, at least.
Well, that's what happened. He got off the middle so quickly, the play was dead, and Wilson made a dumb mistake.
Right.
Payton's made those plays this year. He had, what, 19 interceptions in 7 games this year?
Yeah.
Like, now you got these guys rushing up the middle. It's scary.
It'll be tough for him, but he's kind of in a situation where he just has to manage the game and not screw up a lot and just kind of keep it close. He doesn't have to be spectacular for them to win. And that's why I think, you know, the Broncos have a little bit better chance than people think.
Well, he's going to be risk averse, you would think.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Because he has to be.
Yeah. They understand. Like, and he gets
if
what he is.
If he's not,
at
it's
this
over.
Point.
If he's not, it's over. Like, he has to be. Like, he said,
he has to be Trent Dilfer.
Yeah, exactly. Which
who
is
like
crazy.
the go-to guy when you talk about
Brad
game
Johnson.
Managers. That's right. It's either Brad Johnson or it's Trent Dilfer. And you know what?
Which is a crazy notion considering like our ideas a few years ago of who Peyton Manning was as a quarterback in terms of this elite all-time great guy. Now he's in a situation where, yeah, we're saying, you know, you're probably better off if you're Brad Johnson, if you emulate your game after Trent Dilfer at this point.
Well, don't you think he realizes that's where he's at this
totally,
point in his
totally.
Career?
He's done a really good job adjusting to that.
Yeah.
Because when aging, like older athletes don't excel, like think of like Kobe Bryant earlier this season, it's when they don't understand that they've changed, you know, mm-hmm. they still, their mind is stuck 10 years ago or whatever. And yeah, you're right, Simmons. He's done a good job of understanding and articulating kind of his current place.
Well, and his current place, at least in the minds of many, I think will be influenced considering the result of this game on Sunday. Like his career history, I think, has a chance to be rewritten on Sunday. If he ends up in 4 Super Bowls, 2-2, as opposed to 1-3, I think that's a big difference. How much does the legacy of Peyton Manning, how much of that is on the line on Sunday in one game, Broncos against the Panthers, in a game that, I granted, it's not a one-man game, and his team is heavily considered an underdog, but this is the way these things work when it's all said and done, if this is his final season. If he goes down with a 1-3 record in Super Bowls and blown out in his last two, does that influence how people look back at Peyton Manning's career, Dave?
It may. For me, getting to this point means more for his legacy than the result of the game on Sunday. Like, I really do think in football, for whatever reason, getting, maybe it's just because there's so much fewer teams make the playoffs, whatever the case is, getting to that Super Bowl is almost, in a way, as big of an accomplishment as winning it.
This is like such a weird season though too, right? Because he wasn't a starter for a good portion of the time.
It's the worst year of his career.
He had the most turnovers among quarterbacks in the NFL. But here they are in the Super Bowl.
Like maybe it doesn't even impact it because of that. Maybe it doesn't impact his legacy almost at all because we've kind of acknowledged that the Broncos didn't get here based on Peyton Manning. They also, but they got here. Like he didn't stop his team from reaching a Super Bowl. But he also didn't carry them there, so he's just kind of like a part of the.
He's a passenger.
He's a passenger.
Complimentary piece
on the good train, Denver Broncos, the great ship, Denver Broncos.
But doesn't that have to be part of the Peyton Manning discussion when it's all said and done, his postseason career, Jeff? Because I know he does have that Super Bowl in his back pocket, and it's one more than Dan Marino has, right? And that's the first thing you talk about when you talk about Dan Marino. Yeah, sure, one of the greatest passers of his generation and of NFL history, but never won a Super Bowl. Peyton Manning has one, but if it's only one and the playoff numbers don't jump off the page at you, doesn't that have to be part of the discussion if this is his final game?
Especially if it's a blowout.
Yeah.
I think that will be a lasting image for Peyton Manning. And it's not the most fair thing, as Dave said. To get to the Super Bowl 4 times is really hard.
Sports ain't fair.
But they're not fair. Quarterbacks get too much credit.
Neither's life.
And they take too much blame.
Yeah.
And with Peyton Manning, you have to think about this. It's all the big losses in the big games. And he hasn't been the best when the game has been on the line.
So that's how you remember Peyton Manning? Or that, like,
no, but it's a big part of his legacy. It has to be. Because they were always in the mix. For almost 20 years, they were right there. And to have one Super Bowl with that much talent, that has to be a huge part of his legacy.
And it's kind of like it's difficult to wrap your head around because he does have like a winning record against Tom Brady in his postseason career, but he plays in the same era as Tom Brady, who has all those Super Bowls, which makes the comparison, like the automatic comparison you go to, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, and he's not Tom Brady in the postseason.
But the other thing is, like, I'm thinking of the defenses on those Colts teams. I'm thinking of the players around him. Like, I mentioned Marvin Harrison, and he had some, like, stars, some weapons certainly around him. But to compare the rosters of, like, those Pats teams and the Colts defenses, like, maybe I'm misremembering it, but, like...
No, you're right.
He did a lot with, less when you look at
Tom Brady never had much going on except for that one year, like the 16-0 year. Tom Brady had nothing offensively.
Tom Brady's a better quarterback than Peyton Manning when we look back on history. Like, I don't know if that's a real debate.
I mean, he's separated.
Yeah.
And to me, that's part of the discussion because he played in the Tom Brady era. Everybody's going to compare the two. They'll compare the two during the regular season, and there's a lot easier comparison
Manning doesn't really have a fight in that argument.
Dave makes a fine point because if you look at the team they went to in the last Super Bowl, they were an offensive powerhouse. They had the best statistical offense in NFL history.
The Broncos team?
Yeah. They just ran through the regular season, and in Seattle, that game was a total blowout, and John Elway completely flipped how he wanted to build the team.
Right.
And now that they've kind of gone the other way, they've built themselves more like that Seattle team.
Yeah.
And that kind of speaks to Dave's point that that style that Peyton tried to win with maybe might not be the best way to win, but still, you have to think about Peyton's career, and he was probably, I think, the best regular season quarterback ever. I don't think there's even a debate there.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he's won Super Bowl, it came against Rex Grossman, maybe that's unfair to say.
Yeah. It's just reality.
It's something I can't get out of my head.
No, it's tough.
It's not fair, you're right. Everyone hates quarterbacks and measuring them by wins, but for me, that it just sticks with me.
It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Annis alongside Jeff Simmons and Dave Zarum. So are we 100% convinced this is it for Peyton Manning, no matter what the result, Jeff? If he loses, if he does get blown out again, are we 100% sure he's not going to the Los Angeles Rams or something crazy like that?
I think he's done. But if they get blown out, I wouldn't be surprised if he wanted to come back. But even if he does want to come back, it won't be with Denver.
No, we've already established that.
No, Brock Osweiler's a free agent. They're going to have to make a decision and pay him, so there's no room for Peyton there. But I think this is it. He knows his skills are just completely diminished now, and I don't think he wants to go through the rigors of this again.
You know, I hate to bring it back to Kobe in basketball.
No, you don't. You love to
do it. Yeah, you love it.
but I'm just thinking about, like, this last week for Kobe, he's kind of been on fire, and you can see,
right.
You can see in his face he's thinking, like, you know what, maybe I'll come back another year after, like, after he announces retirement. And Peyton has a good game, and especially, if you said, if Peyton performs well and his team loses in some kind of crushing fashion, I could see him saying, you know what, like, maybe I have one more year, even if it's delusional, you know. I don't know how rational these guys are all the time when self-evaluating themselves. But at the same time, I mean, you said it. He's got to look around and kind of smell the rose and see what's happening in terms of his style of play, which is just kind of hard to watch at this point. His production, which has fallen off. And another Super Bowl loss, I mean, it's tough. If he wins it, I think he walks off for sure, right?
I'm trying to think of the teams he can even go to. If you go to, say, the Rams, that was the rumor that came up. That means you got to go against Arizona. You got to go against Seattle, and maybe Carolina.
Are there teams out there that want Peyton Manning?
That's the thing.
I would think so. Look at the state of NFL quarterbacking. Like, Ryan Lindley was back in the league by the end of the season. And the guy was selling houses, like, a week before he was back in the NFL.
I'm trying to think of teams here. The Jets, I think they'd rather Fitzpatrick.
Like, I'd rather roll the dice and try to develop a young guy than bring Manning on board and...
Because it's only a one-year solution, right? You're not really helping your team other than...
That's the thing, is at this point, he's not winning you games, right?
Yeah, he's better than Case Keenum, but...
His best role, if he were to come back, would be to, like, groom someone like he arguably did with Osweiler.
And the thing is, he's not good at that. There's something in Peyton Manning's DNA. He doesn't let the backup take reps.
Really, I didn't know...
If you notice in Indy, they never developed or came close to developing a guy because...
Painter's not a thing, is he?
No, because no one got the practice time.
I never thought about that,
He's a perfectionist, right?
Right.
He wants every rep, and especially at this age, he might almost want it more.
Mm. Yeah.
So is he a guy who has, like, coaching in his future, do you think?
I've always wondered that because...
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
He does a big camp every year.
Yeah.
And the Manning camp is famous for young quarterbacks, but he's such a perfectionist and almost to the point of insanity. I wonder if he would drive players crazy because he'd want them to be exactly like him.
It's the Kobe thing, man. I'm telling you, there's a parallel here.
There
somewhere.
Is. I think he might be better in personnel, someone like Elway.
Okay.
I can't see him on TV. I think he'd bore the hell out of everyone. Trying to break down the game, but
he's a pretty good actor, though. Like, as long as stuff is written for him, he can be funny.
I just couldn't see him in the media. I don't think he'd like that. I think he's too competitive. And
yeah,
I think either coaching or maybe he's got the money in the family to get into ownership.
Yeah,
yeah.
Maybe he can just chill, enjoy.
I can't see the Manning not in football though. Like, what's that guy gonna do?
Well, yeah, manages Papa John's. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, he can do the commercials.
Yeah, well, he already does that. All right, so let's talk about the other guy, Cam Newton, who is, frankly...
Awesome. We went 20 minutes without talking about Cam Newton. That's a Super Bowl record.
Yeah, it is, and it's ridiculous because the guy's the most exciting player in the NFL right now.
Super quickly, I mean, you're right. Cam Newton's the guy we should be talking about, but Peyton... In terms of, like, the last 20 years, when you look at, you know, we've all been following sports so closely during that time, and Peyton's been such a major name in that. So even the possibility of this guy wrapping up his career warrants the discussion. But, yeah, let's talk about Cam because he's way more exciting, way better.
Well, and with the Super Bowl victory, putting one in his back pocket at this point in his career, already on pace and might be emerging as the face of the NFL, and Peyton Manning saying as much during Media Day on Monday. If he picks up a victory on Sunday, he has one, completes this incredible season where they only lose once during the entire season, Dave. Like, could we be on the verge of something historic with Cam Newton here as well?
Well, with him, you're kind of just seeing a guy fulfilling expectations, I think, you know.
But if you go back to that draft, and yeah, he was the first overall selection. There was some question about whether his skill set would translate to the NFL. It was not a slam dunk that the Panthers even took him with that first overall pick.
But once you do, you think you're getting someone who's capable of taking you to a Super Bowl and hopefully winning it, you know. And I think for a few years, as they struggled, you know, as a young quarterback learns the league, blah, 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 as they try to put the right players around him, it didn't seem like he'd become that guy. So I think the coolest part of this season for Cam Newton has been seeing him become that number one pick, the guy who the Panthers thought he could be, the guy who we saw win that championship with Auburn. And this is just kind of the next step in his legacy, for lack of a better word. And then what's going to be really interesting is to see where it goes from here. Like, how much more does he have in him?
Yeah, he's really grown on the field this year because he's always been the guy who's had a lot of ups and downs, and you saw stuff with when he put the towel on his head. He wouldn't respond well to the losses. But he's always been that fun-loving. And Dave's right. This is the guy you saw in college. The guy just looked like he was playing at a different level than everyone else.
Yeah.
Franchise quarterback in every sense.
But he's different. He's almost transcending the game because there's never been a guy like him who's been this strong and this dynamic. And now he's playing from the pocket and playing like a quarterback.
Right. You don't see him run very often at all.
But I think that took years. You know, that just took time to get to this point. So... You know, he's developed himself as a quarterback.
And then the growth has been fascinating because how do you stop this guy? It's kind of like there's no one really like him who's that big and that strong and could throw that well.
Like Ben Roethlisberger is kind of like the same body type and he's a difficult guy to bring down, but he doesn't have that other element of being able to run the football at all, which, again, you don't see a bunch from Cam Newton anymore, but Cam's got the elusiveness in the pocket, but once he gets outside, he's a threat to run.
What's kind of cool about his draft year, I just looking at because you mentioned it, number one, Cam Newton, number two, Von Miller.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're probably
and they're
happy
playing each other.
And Ben's right. When that draft came around, I'm a draft guy. I like this stuff too much, probably. He wasn't a slam dunk at all.
No.
I remember SI came out with the magazine, and they had Blaine Gabbert on the cover, and Christian Ponder was in that draft year, Jake Locker. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of debate between those guys.
Marcel Darius, they weren't even necessarily going to look quarterback.
Well, that draft was crazy. Julio Jones was in that one. AJ Green,
Alden Smith, maybe.
Yeah, Patrick Peterson. But Cam is just Ben Roethlisberger is probably the best comparison. I think you're right with that. But there's like Cam is really smart and become really smart reading defenses, and he doesn't get enough credit for that. And he's doing it with nobody's a wide receiver.
That's what I was going to say. Like, look at his receiving corps, and
he's turned Ted Ginn into something.
Yeah, Ted Ginn was almost out of the league.
Right.
Although Greg Olsen.
Greg Olsen's a great tight end. And they have.
What is he, the third best tight end in football?
I'd say second.
Second?
They have a really complex running game that's really hard to defend. With the read option stuff, they got crazy formations. And Cam just adds that he's a third guy. See, the thing is, when you're passing the ball, usually it's a 10-on-11 matchup because the quarterback is.
Right.
Now you got to deal with the quarterback running, and you can't turn your back because he can go. And now Cam's throwing from the pocket.
Yeah.
So how do you stop that? And no one has this year.
We'll see if the Denver Broncos can on Sunday. I thought it would be more of an issue, the Cam race thing, as far as the celebration and the dabbing and all that, because he brought it up, and I thought it was an underlying storyline throughout the entire season. He's decided to shut it down this season, and with good reason, too. I don't know why you'd want to be talking about that.
Should have been shut down a long time ago. The fact that this is a conversation point is just beyond me.
What, you don't think... What, you don't think there is an underlying aspect to Race the way he's been criticized for the dabbing and the celebrations? I think there absolutely is an aspect.
If there is, like, those, the people who really feel that way, like, don't dignify, like, they don't deserve us to sit here and talk about them. Do you know what I mean? Like, they should be ignored.
I think it's
left to pasture.
And maybe it's naive for me, but I feel like it's less of a conversation in this country. I feel like there's way fewer people in this country who think it's an issue at all, the celebrating. But maybe I'm wrong.
I thought, I didn't think we'd even talk about it on this show because I thought, you know, here in Canada, we just like, we don't, I'd like to hope we don't see things as black and white like they do in the States. I just think it's a ridiculous topic, you know, like, so you have a problem with the celebrations, you have a problem with him giving football to kids, or he celebrates for too long, or the dab is an issue somehow because he's black. Like, it's just the most, asinine kind of approach to the Super Bowl is to talk about the white quarterback versus the black quarterback.
Well, especially considering how many white quarterbacks have done celebrations, have been as bombastic after scoring as Cam Newton.
It's funny you say that. Brett Favre.
Right.
He's about to go into the Hall of Fame today. They're going to announce that tonight. But he was celebrated for having, look how much fun he's having.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't even want to shine any light on people who
We don't want to dumb down to these type of people. Totally with you.
But you know what? Arash Madani did a great job.
I saw that. It
with
was
that piece on Sportsnet Central the other day. And you listen to some of the clips, like, from this season. You know, like, there's Trent Dilfer. There's people who did come down pretty hard on Cam Newton for the celebrating.
The old school football people don't like it. And I think it's absurd. I'm with Dave.
Of course.
I do too. What do you want? Like, what do you want to see? Like, What's your issue there? What do you really have a problem with?
Like, I can tell you, I cheer for a different team in the NFC, and the quarterback might be the most boring man.
Yes.
He's like a robot personality, buttoned up. He doesn't celebrate.
Yeah, you can say
You can say it's Wilson.
You can even see.
Oh, yeah, okay. Russell Wilson's commercials.
We know it's the Seahawks.
The way he Googles love letters, everything about him is boring. Cam Newton is fantastic. We should be celebrating this guy.
Totally.
He hasn't gotten arrested. This is a game. Football is a game. He hasn't committed a crime. He hasn't done anything wrong. The fact that people are coming out and saying he's like, it's the stuff because of it's the letters from fans and parents. It's
his
absurd.
Teammates love him, it seems, as well.
He's a great teammate. This is a game. Like, people seem to miss this point.
Now, and you know what? Maybe it's switched a little bit because they are so good this year. Maybe it's a little more unseemly if you're a team that's like 1-15. Or even 7-9, they made the playoffs
last
year.
That becomes the conversation then hopefully stops becoming about race. It becomes about celebrating losing. You know, like, you see guys,
right.
Who was it? Like, celebrating touchdowns when they brought the score to like 40-7 with their touchdown. You know, it's like celebrating during blowout losses. That's a different issue. With Newton, he's celebrating because his team is dominating. And for the people who don't like him doing it in blowout wins, like, go play sports and dominate. Like, you feel great and you want to express that.
In professional sports, there should be no problem running up the score. That's your job, is to score points. Your job to stop the other team from scoring.
And in the process, you're so completely justified to celebrate that.
And especially in that league where, quite frankly, your life is on the line every Sunday.
Absolutely.
The amount of emotion, adrenaline, whatever.
The two most celebrated athletes in North American sports are Michael Jordan and probably Muhammad Ali.
Mm-hmm.
Probably two of the biggest trash talkers ever.
Yeah.
And when we look back on them, what do we remember them for? Greatness.
Yeah. And in Michael Jordan's case, like, not a classy trash talker
either. No, that Muggsy Bogues story. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
That was incredible.
Yeah, they're money more like it.
We'll talk about that a little bit off air. Our picks coming up later on in the program. We'll get into some prop bets as well. But when we come back, Blue Jays holding their State of the Franchise on Thursday. It's now called the Leadoff. Mark Shapiro not booed by season ticket holders. That was nice. But some big decisions coming up for this team as they head into a spring training later this month and pick up a couple of free agent minor league pitchers as well. We'll discuss coming up next. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Annis alongside Dave Zarum and Jeff Simmons. This is the Sportsnet Radio Network.
The latest issue of Sportsnet Magazine includes a who's who of stars offering tips on how to be the best at what they do. Here's Christina Rutherford.
You know who's not participating in Super Bowl Sunday? The Cleveland Browns. Yeah, no kidding. They haven't made the playoffs in 14 years. The last time they played in the Super Bowl was never. So, what is it like to cheer for a perennial loser? As part of our how-to package, we found out. We track down a longtime season's ticket holder, a guy born and raised in Cleveland who now lives in Toronto. His name is Mark Lloyd. He has his PhD in philosophy. He's smart. He's a thinker. And yet, he's also a Browns fan. Here's how Mark describes what it's like to back the Browns.
You don't get to choose your family. You kind of stick with them, even if they're a bunch of losers. I guess on some level, I realize that it reflects well on me that I don't abandon people when they're failing. So I think optimism is important. There is always hope. I mean, look, I mean, it's extremely unlikely that any team should be as bad as the Browns have been. As much as I'm as demoralized as I've ever been, I still think the next 10 years are going to be better.
Optimism is big. So are low expectations.
I used to dream of the Browns going to the Super Bowl. In 2014, they were 6-3 at one point, okay? That was so much fun. I booked a hotel room in the Phoenix area just in case. I did. That used to be my aspiration. Now my hope is that they can get into the playoffs, the wild card, and go 1-done.
That story and more can be found in the latest issue of Sportsnet Magazine on newsstands now. And available on texture by next issue or by downloading the Sportsnet Magazine app for Apple, Android, and Windows tablets and phones. As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more great sports talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Born in the sea, somehow it always seems that I'm dreaming of something I could never be. It doesn't bother me, cause I will always be that pimp that I see in all of my fantasies. I don't know.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis alongside Jeff Simmons and Dave Zarum. Blue Jays spring training cranking up. Pitchers and catchers reporting February 21st. So the countdown is on a couple of months, less than 2 months now until opening day of the regular season in Tampa. Blue Jays home schedule opening up at home against David Price and the Boston Red Sox as well. That'll be a whole lot of fun. But gents, Blue Jays holding their what used to be called the State of the Franchise event down at Rogers Center. I was there. It's now called the Leadoff. It was a little different setup this time. There were some chairs on the field, and there was a big stage. Mark Shapiro there, Ross Atkins there, John Gibbons there, center fielder Kevin Pillar there, as well as Buck Martinez, Dan Shulman. It was a good time had by all. There are some interesting storylines headed into this season, and some things that maybe don't concern the 2016 season, but the future of this team, really, a lot is on the line this year. Partly because, and Shai Davidi, a great piece on Sportsnet.ca a couple of weeks ago about the payroll and understanding where the payroll is in future years and how much that affects their ability to re-sign Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion. There's those two guys. There's Josh Donaldson headed to an arbitration hearing, maybe. Maybe they can figure something out. But if this team, Dave, does not come close to meeting expectations, if they're no good this year, which I think we'd be surprised because they seem like a good enough team, mm-hmm. but that could be a disaster of epic proportions going forward for this team.
Well, I mean, there's just a ton on the line for the Blue Jays this season in almost every way. You look at the momentum they gained, the amount of fans they brought on board or maybe brought back on board. With their success with reaching the playoffs, that's all in jeopardy this season. And part of it includes, like you said, like losing your two best hitters.
Yeah. Two of them. Yeah.
Two of them at least. Yeah. I mean, yeah, everything's on the line. I think if they don't make the playoffs, is that enough for you to say we need to regroup this or rethink?
Well, I think it depends because if like, they're right into it, if they're, right,
is that enough?
Because
I think expectations should be higher.
They are high, but baseball's tougher than almost any other sport to make the playoffs, right? Save for the
what
the
is
NFL.
The expectation this year?
Oh, I think it's to repeat and just to get to a World Series. But it's tough. You play in that division, and the Yankees one of a very select few teams that did not sign a single free agent,
which is fascinating.
Yeah, the first time in the history of that franchise that they've not signed a single major league free agent. Now, there's still time, and they might need to with Greg Bird going down for the season. But they've added to the back of their bullpen. The back end is ridiculous. Those three guys that they can throw at you. The Red Sox have improved greatly. They were already a great team second half of next year. Mm-hmm. I mean, even with the Blue Jays being a good team, if they underperform even slightly, if the pitching does not live up to what they hope it can be, it's not out of the realm of possibility they miss the playoffs entirely, which would be a disaster considering where this team wants to go going forward.
Right.
What does it mean, though, and how important is it to re-sign guys like Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion?
I think it's pretty critical. Like, in a perfect world, you would have done it already. You know what I mean? Like, before you head into the season knowing this group you have is going to be here for at least the short long run. That doesn't make any sense. Your group's going to be here for a while if you bring back those guys. The problem is, though, they probably know that their value on the free agent market is going to be way higher than it's going to be right now, re-signing or signing an extension with the Blue Jays. So it's a tough situation. I'd make re-signing Bautista at least a priority if I'm the Jays, just because of everything he means to the team and everything he's done, the message that was sent the fans. But, you know, it's gonna be a difficult decision. And it's not gonna happen until the end of the season.
And I wonder if I'm the player or their agent, if I even want to sign yet.
Well, and they're saying all the right things, and we're hearing these stories from the Canadian press about Jose Bautista wanting to be a Blue Jay for life. But what else are you gonna say?
I imagine his agent told him be positive.
Right. Well, also you think about the guy's career, the guy's story, like the relationship he probably has with this team and the city.
Yeah,
They gave him the chance.
Given who he was coming in here and who he is now. I'd believe if he wants to be a Blue Jay for life, but money talks, opportunity talks.
And the romantic side is great, but if you think about the agent side, and I imagine he's thinking this, we've been taking this team-friendly deal for, what,
right,
5 years?
Right. Yeah, he's a
This
bargain.
Is our last chance to cash in.
And it turns out that it was team-friendly, but remember at the time, it was a big leap of faith.
Oh, it was a huge risk.
Alex Anthopoulos.
Oh, absolutely. And now, they're going to go the other way. I think they want their $100 million or more.
And the interesting part about that is that, you know, and you were talking about it during the break a bit, the warm reception that Mark Shapiro got at mm-hmm. that season ticket holder event.
Yeah, the leadoff.
At the leadoff. He is a guy who I don't feel is in a rush to overpay for anybody, and is, I get the feeling, one of the more pragmatic managers out there. So, that doesn't help Jose Bautista's chances of getting a huge payday in a big long-term extension.
And there are baseball reasons not to give a 35-year-old guy $100 million, right?
But I see Bautista as a guy who can keep this going for at least a couple more seasons, at least three maybe even.
Sure. Looking back, you would have said the same thing about Albert Pujols, right? Turns out the St. Louis Cardinals were brilliant in not offering him the big deal that the Angels did. Right. Is Jose Bautista Albert Pujols? I tend to think not. Different cases entirely. And certainly in the American League, you can move him out of right field. Because he did get a starting job so late in his career, maybe there's less miles on him.
I think there's validity to that.
It's and I guess under the framework of a payroll of about $140 million, it makes less sense than a payroll of $150, $160 million. And going back to what Shai wrote on the website, part of the payroll for 2017, Jeff, I imagine has to do with this team's record, this team's success this year. We've seen how much, whether the Blue Jays, win or lose, how much that affects the bottom line with the parent company, Rogers. If they're no good this year and people aren't turning out to the ballpark and aren't watching on TV, that maybe doesn't bode so well for 2017. Not to say that they'd strip it bare, because you'll still have Troy Tulowitzki, Josh Donaldson, Russell Martin, Devin Travis, Kevin Pillar, Marcus Stroman in 2017, but this team makes its hay with its offense, and to lose two key pieces in Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion, especially if one of those guys stays within the division and plays for another team, would be devastating for this team.
Yeah, and that's my point. That's why this is such an important year for them. It might be almost their last chance with this group. And if you look at the rest of the division, the Red Sox are already pretty good. They got a lot of young guys, and they're always going to spend. The Yankees are a team, they got a ton of money coming off. We mentioned they haven't spent any money this year.
Yeah.
They're expected to spend a ton next year. and they're going to be after these guys. The Red Sox are perfect fit for Encarnacion with Ortiz coming off. If the Jays can't get both these guys, which I think personally is a long shot, I don't see how they can get both of them signed.
I mean, but to your point about the payroll and how much this season will affect payroll, I mean, I think right now if you're Rodgers, you are incredibly foolish if you don't dump as much money as possible into this team, into the payroll, into making this team better.
But haven't they?
Because we saw last year how much of a difference willing to spend and willing to kind of devote all your as much resources as possible. Look at the difference it made in the product on the field and subsequently in kind of your dividends off the field, which is just astronomical. So you have such an opportunity. If the Blue Jays are a winning team, this company has seen how much of a difference it makes. It's gonna be idiotic not to try to do whatever you can to repeat that.
I totally agree with you, but at the same time, you look, the payroll really hasn't changed.
It hasn't, yeah.
Yeah, and they didn't really do much in free agency, and this was their kind of their chance to maybe build on this.
And I think they may have dropped the ball by not being more kind of spend.
I totally agree. I was gonna actually pitch a story this week on that.
Yeah.
I think they have dropped the ball.
There's validity there. You had something.
The one thing I will say in that regard is there are no guarantees. And even with the big moves they made at last year's non-waiver trade deadline, acquiring David Price, sending all their prospects out the door, Mark Lowe and Ben Revere,
right.
It all worked out for this team, and there were reasons, underlying numbers, why it would, but it didn't have to. And it hasn't in previous years. In 2013, they were expected to win the World Series. They were a horrible team.
Right.
They made a huge leap in payroll that offseason as well. But no question, it's got people talking, people excited about the potential for this Blue Jays team. People also excited about the potential of the Toronto Raptors. They've been a real good team this year, and they've been without their big free agent acquisition for long portions of the season in the NBA's trade deadline approaching as well. We'll discuss whether or not the Raptors should make a move and also look ahead to the NBA's All-Star Weekend, which is fast approaching here in the city of Toronto. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Jeff Simmons and Dave Zarum on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. It's a magazine. You don't have to feel obligated to buy from your nephew's fundraiser. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, free on your radio. Now. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis alongside Jeff Simmons and Dave Zarum. Raptors real good, 34-16, game and a half back of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Nice little Western roadie. I mean, the roadie continues, and it's going to be interrupted by the All-Star Weekend. They get back to work against the Pistons on Monday. 2-1, though, through three Western opponents, losing only to the Denver Nuggets, snapping that 11-game winning streak. You're not going to win every game the rest of the season. They were due for a clunker. That was certainly it. This Raptors team is real good. And they're not a mirage, which the 2014-2015 edition was. We saw the foundation start to crumble in the second half of the season. All season long, they never played defense. And it all came to a head in the postseason, that four-game sweep to the hands of the Washington Wizards. This team is not a mirage. We'd be shocked if they really fell flat on their face, barring injury, second half of the season. That being said, Dave, we're now approaching the trade deadline in the NBA. Is it time to strike? Is it time to make an addition to this team to fortify its chances to not win an NBA title? I think people would say it's probably like 50-1 that they win an NBA title. First of all, to go through the Cavaliers and whatever monstrosity comes out of the Western Conference. It's near impossible, but to make an Eastern Conference Finals appearance a legitimate goal, is this the time to start adding pieces to this team?
You know, I don't think you're in a position where you need to start looking at making big trades. I mean, you look at the group that's got you to where you are today. I wouldn't disrupt that at all. You know, I wouldn't be looking to trade any kind of major piece. So when you look at what the Raptors are in a position to give up with that in mind, it's like, a late first round draft pick, maybe someone like a Patrick Patterson.
Maybe that Knicks Nuggets pick has some value.
It might, but even still, those are teams like the Knicks, I think, are going to be scratching and clawing for a final playoff spot.
Yeah.
Throughout the season, like they'll probably taper off a little bit at the end, but that pick's going to be like 10, 11, 12.
But what if they, you know, win the lottery? What if they miss the playoffs?
Like if you, with the Knicks chance, with that Knicks pick, your chance to win the lottery will be like 0.8% or like 1.2%. So that's really, really unlikely. And other teams know that as well, right? So there, I mean, a lottery pick, even if it's a very late lottery pick, has value. It doesn't have enough value to bring in any kind of significant player. So I think what they're going to be in a position to do is add a veteran, that wing depth, especially now that James Johnson's injured, Damari Carroll's out. You know, the PJ Tucker was a name that was floated out earlier this week. And that's the type of player who I see the Raptors targeting. Now, they've also been linked to bigger names like Kenneth Faried and Thad Young out in Brooklyn. Markieff Morris, obviously, this past week was another name that they were linked to. But those guys will take a little more assets to get on your team. And I'm just not sure, given how well they're playing on both ends of the floor, I'm not sure if it's worth disrupting that.
Don't you have to, Jeff, when you look at the way this Raptors team has played and sitting a game and a half back at Cleveland, Cleveland has its warts, and I know they'd be the heavy underdogs headed into a seven-game series against the Cavaliers, and rightly so. They've beaten the Cavs this year. It's not like they get blown out every time they play Cleveland, play them tight, although last time was not that close. They've beaten them at home. If you're not going to add a piece at this deadline, like, when are you going to add a piece? And isn't there a tremendous amount of pressure to win a series? And sure, they can win a series as stands right now, but wouldn't you like to at least add a piece or two to not guarantee yourself a spot in the second round, but to give yourself a better shot?
It all depends on the asking price. And for me, I'm with Dave. I don't think you touch the core. You got to leave this group together.
But there's even young guys on this team who I would keep and develop. Like I've heard Lucas Nogueira involved, and like he's a guy whose trade value could be up now. Like I wouldn't even budge on those.
Oh,
guys.
Come on, you like Bebe? Really? You wouldn't give up Bebe? You think Bebe is like going to be the piece of the puzzle that pushes this team to like a championship level?
No, but do you think Markieff Morris is?
Well, I think there's a better shot of Markieff Morris, you know, factoring in on this team.
But that's not going to be a straight up trade.
But I can't, like, I can't believe you even suggested that Bebe Nogueira is, like, untouchable.
I love Bebe.
Okay.
I want to see what he can develop. I see Bebe.
I like Bebe, too. I'm
solid
kinda I'm
backup
surprised,
center.
I'm surprised they haven't used him more, considering
they can't.
That little burst he had.
There's just not enough minutes to go around for him.
And I get it. But, yeah, and you got three centers in Bismack and Jonas Valanciunas. I'm with you, but, like, you got to trade something to get something. The guy can't he goes weeks without playing.
Yeah, then you're going to never trade anyone.
Right.
Okay, Bebe is a far out there example, but like okay. But like you said,
Bruno, you can't trade Bruno.
You can't trade Bruno.
Well, he's only
it's
2
true.
Years away now.
Yeah, it's
that's
true.
That's right. Now he is. Yeah. He was 2 years away from being 2 years away. Now he's finally 2 years away.
Bruno's a fascinating case cuz he's still really up and down in the D League, and he's
right.
A bit of a mystery. But anyways, in terms of the trade market, yeah, I hear what you're saying. You know, you've got a window right now. I mean, the Raptors have really separated themselves in the East. They're, what, a game and a half back from Cleveland?
Yep.
Chicago is still a team, who, even though they might have lost Jimmy Butler, which changes everything. He got hurt last night. But Chicago is still a team that I fear, for lack of a better word, in a playoff series.
And, like, the Raptors are the only team that seemingly has issues with them because they're only 5 games over 500.
It's a bad matchup. They don't play them particularly well. JV always has nice games against them, it seems, but it's whatever. For whatever reason, Chicago I don't like in a playoff series. Cleveland, obviously, is a lot to handle in a playoff series. Any other team in the East, I think the Raptors have a pretty clear advantage over in a 7-game series. So with that in mind, like, the type of piece to bring you to the next level where you can compete with a Cleveland and talk about legitimately making the finals, they don't have the assets to go and get that piece unless you're willing to give up DeMar DeRozan or something like that.
Yeah, that's not worth it. But maybe a veteran three-point shooter.
Exactly. Are you still trusting
Terrence Ross in the big games?
Terrence Ross really turned it around lately.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
You just invested in him. It's more when you look at the James Johnson injury and Carroll, and you wonder how long Carroll might be out and what kind of shape he's going to be in when he comes back. That makes you look at the small forward spot. I know right now they're playing Norm Powell a lot, and he's probably not ready yet.
No.
But that's where you have to look at, and that's why the P.J. Tucker thing made sense. I love the idea of fortifying your power forward spot because, like, let's be honest, Patrick Patterson has been a disappointment overall this year.
Still playing good defense.
He's playing, listen, he's solid. He's good. He hasn't gotten better than last year, and he may have gotten a little worse. So he's still solid, but that's the position where I think you see the need to upgrade.
Did Tucker play the four?
Yeah, yeah. But even still, Tucker's going to make a minor difference, someone like that. But those are the only options I think.
Well, that's what I'm suggesting, right? I don't think you trade away from the group.
And listen, whatever you do, this is basketball. It still comes down to how DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry perform in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's the story, right?
Yeah, it is. And they've been one of the best guard combos in the NBA, start to finish. DeMar DeRozan really emerging as, you get bogged down in semantics a little bit because people have like the, Joe Flacco elite conversation. Is he elite? Well, is DeMar DeRozan a superstar? The guy's played on a superstar level for a couple of months here now. This regular season.
I mean, going back to even last season before he got hurt, and you look around the landscape of the NBA, how many shooting guards are better than DeMar DeRozan?
Well, there's
Klay Thompson.
Yeah,
maybe
James Harden
and James Harden, who I hate, whose game I hate. And that's about it.
Well, and you know what? Yeah, and James Harden, it's only one end of the floor.
Right, right. And DeMar DeRozan used to be only one end of the floor, but he's improved a lot. You can't say enough about DeRozan's improvement. The fact that him and Lowry are both playing their best basketball right now is why the Raptors are where they are, like right near the top of the conference, and we're talking about legitimately possibly making a conference finals. So it really all hinges on these guys. It has for the whole season. Nothing's going to change from that end.
Yeah, I'll take the devil's advocate side because you would have said the same about Lowry and DeRozan last year around the All-Star break. And for me, for them to become superstars, and you can't say enough about DeRozan's play this year. He's really turned at least my view on him a little bit. These guys have to be great in the playoffs because they really weren't last year.
That's what I'm saying. It all hinges on those guys in the playoffs.
For me to consider them superstars, because it's a lot easier to do it against the Charlottes of the world. And
no question, part of last year's problem, the problem with that team last year in the four-game sweep by the Wizards was defense. They played horrible defense. But the offense was super stagnant as well. And has there been enough of a change with the way this team plays offense this year than a year ago?
That is an interesting question because you're right. All the talk was like, hey, we can't have this one-on-one ball. We can't have like Lou Williams hero ball. That's not, it might work in the regular season. In the playoffs, we saw it does not work. So what we need is ball movement. We need to get the ball moving more. Let's bring in, let's upgrade our backup point guard. Let's bring Corey Joseph in. Let's upgrade small forwards. Bring DeMarre Carroll, who comes from this Atlanta system where all they do is move the ball. You know, these guys can't help but pass the ball. They always make the extra pass. And that's why they were so successful last year. And then, ironically, the Raptors right now sit dead last in the NBA in assists per game.
Well, and Kyle Lowry had a zero assist game a couple of games ago. Now, that doesn't happen regularly, but the offense doesn't seem all that different as far as the style.
I think it's more, it becomes a function of your personnel. You know what I mean? DeMar DeRozan is more effective when he can isolate on the wing and then kind of abuse the guy trying to defend him. Kyle Lowry, too, is super effective in those kind of one-on-one ISO situations. So you're playing to your team's strengths by not moving the ball as much as you like to in a way. But it is interesting. We thought this big change would be in ball movement, and that's not where we've seen the difference. The difference we've seen has been in defense for the most part.
Yeah, and you would have thought that would be conducive to a half-court game.
Right.
Isolation ball. It's certainly what was one of the strengths of the Cleveland Cavaliers, when you can just hand the ball off to LeBron James, and we saw that be real effective because they won a couple of games off the Golden State Warriors last year with nobody else around him.
Crazy.
But there's only one LeBron James.
Second best player on the team was like Dellavedova, maybe Tristan Thompson.
Right.
And yeah, like no one's LeBron James except for LeBron James and maybe Steph Curry and maybe Kevin Durant.
That's an issue with the NBA, though. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Only like three guys can win.
And I guess, are we too quick to say that this team, okay, maybe not this year, that they can't win an NBA title? I think, again, it would be the shock of all shocks, even though they've taken the Warriors down to the wire twice and they've beaten the Spurs, the one of seven teams.
Beat the Thunder, who I think we could very well see in the finals.
Beat the Cavs. They swept the Clippers.
Yeah. No, like listen, this team's playing good basketball against strong opponents, which didn't used to be the case.
Are we too quick to dismiss them? Because I know south of the border, like they get a lot of love on power rankings.
Hold on,
I feel like we're jaded a little bit.
Who's dismissing them? Like I know you want to make an upgrade at the deadline, and we were just talking about them being a potentially safe like conference finals team. I don't know. If, it's not a lock by any measure, but I'm not looking down. I don't think they're playing poorly. I'm not looking down on them.
No, I'm not saying that we look down on them, but we don't consider them as an NBA Finals, like having any chance to make an NBA Finals.
It's funny. It's because,
I was just saying this week. This is a top five team in the NBA.
Right.
Why is there no buzz in the city about these guys?
I think it's because that's a different conversation.
But, like, isn't that fit? Like, people are still skeptical, and they're all like, let's wait for the playoffs.
You know why I think? I think a lot of it is that playoff series last year, that Wizards sweep.
Sucked the life out of
it. It killed the momentum of any new fans who had jumped on board by their success last season, saw what happened in that playoff series, and thought, oh, yeah, these are the Raptors I remember. I'm going to check out, and maybe a buddy of mine will tell me when it's worth watching them again. More specifically, that fourth game. The way they just kind of turned over, turtled, that was hard to watch. And I think that really killed a lot of their momentum, because you think of the whole We the North thing and the whole Jurassic Park and how much new energy, new fans around the city were hovering around this team. I still think there's a lot there. You still see the merchandise do really well, and I still think you'll see that Jurassic Park scene unfold in the playoffs. But no question that the buzz it doesn't match the performance.
Well, that's what... Like, when he says people are dismissing me, I kind of see that.
Yeah.
And in a year where the buzz for the Maple Leafs has never been lower.
That's what I mean. Like, coming off what happened with the Blue Jays, and this is Toronto, this was not exactly a successful sports city. We got a top five team in the city, and everyone's still nervous.
It takes one series win. They don't have a seven-game series win in the franchise's history, right?
Right. Well, five.
Yeah, I think you'll see it back in the playoffs. Everyone will get the Raptors flags on, yeah.
Even though it'll be up against, Blue Jays spring training and that season's starting to crank up. But I've had this conversation on this radio station the last couple of weeks about, I can't believe that people are already jaded about this team. We're just talking about 2 years of successful basketball in this incarnation of the Raptors. And 2 years ago, they made a game seven against a good Nets team that was slightly favored in that series and came down to the last shot in game seven. Now, last year, okay, I get it. There were some sour feelings. That's just 1 year that we can be jaded so quickly with this team is kind of hilarious.
If you look at like last, it is funny, but that's sports fans for you. If you look at the last year as like a terrible blip in the kind of radar, they are on this trajectory where they've kind of just continuing from where they started building after that Rudy Gay trade. The next natural progression is to have that playoff success. If that doesn't happen, then we need to revisit this conversation and say maybe everyone had a point the whole time. I think it will happen. I think they are going to win at least a round.
Yeah. Well, if they don't, it's a huge disaster, right? Like, can you project what the offseason looks like if they lose in the first round, even if it's seven games? Like, doesn't matter.
If it's seven games and close, I think that it makes it harder to completely blow it up. But if it's another sweep, another five-game loss, six-game loss, I see, like, widespread changes. And you kind of have to, because what you'd be proving is what we have going on here isn't working. But you know, we were talking about the Blue Jays before. I think it's a very similar situation in that the future course of this team really does hinge on what happens this season, specifically in the playoffs,
and specifically the head coach probably in the crosshairs as well. Dwayne Casey, a big decision looming on his future.
The coach is always in the crosshairs, always the first to get blame and whatnot. I mean, you saw what happened in Phoenix. Jeff Hornacek wasn't the reason why the Suns were terrible.
Right.
The fact that they lost all their good players and had an ill-fitting roster to begin with is why the Suns are terrible. But the coach is always the first to go. I think Dwayne Casey's done a really good job. I think you've seen in him lately, one of the biggest knocks was kind of his out-of-timeout plays and his diagramming of plays. And I think if you look at the last couple weeks, I really liked what I've seen on that end. The guys buy into, he's got a good relationship. He's been able to develop a good relationship with Kyle Lowry. I got a story about that in the next Sportsnet magazine. So, yeah, I mean, he will be in the crosshairs if they don't win, but I don't know if that's deserved.
Yeah, and it's not – it's like there's no – looking at the way this team's played, looking at their record all season long, there's no indications that would tell you that they're going to lose in the opening round of the postseason. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. Ben Ennis, Jeff Simmons, Dave Zarum on the Sportsnet Radio Network. So you mentioned Norm Powell getting a bit of a run there at the three, maybe a natural two, but playing the three with James Johnson out.
Yeah, I think DeMar kind of plays the three in that situation too.
Yeah, either way. He's still very much a work in progress. I think he's missed his last, like, seven field goals or whatever. This team has a bunch of young players that might have futures. I mean, you mentioned Bebe. He can't get any run. Bruno doesn't spend a lot of time in the NBA. You love Bebe. Okay, go ahead.
I love Bebe, but there's no, like, blue-chip prospects on the Raptors.
No, there aren't.
Is Bruno anything? I hear he's nothing. I hear the team doesn't view him at all.
No, that's not true.
No?
No. I mean, like, they view him highly. They have huge expectations for him still.
Still.
I mean, last year was his rookie season, and we're halfway into his second season. Like, nothing's changed. Masai Ujiri will be the first one to say, like, 2 years away from being 2 years away. Like, yeah, it's pretty accurate. They took such a raw player and threw him into the fire. What's been troublesome about Bruno is that the reason they got a D-League team was because of Bruno.
Right.
Or I should say they drafted Bruno knowing that it was going to be a package with this D-League team coming, like a whole kind of future development plan. But you haven't seen him perform consistently the way they wanted him to. They thought the D-League would be a great place for him to go down. Maybe not dominate. Maybe not dominate, but certainly be like an assertive kind of force.
Get plenty of minutes.
Get a ton of minutes, all that kind of stuff. Build his confidence up, whatever. And the problem what you're seeing this year is his confidence hasn't necessarily improved. And that's the most troubling thing for me because the ability's there. But it's all between the ears.
It's hard not to like what DeLon Wright's done every time he goes down there. The guy like doesn't miss a shot in the D-League.
He's the best player on the floor every time he's in a D-League game. And I caught a couple D-League games early this season in which he played, and he could literally do whatever he wanted to on the floor.
That's what you want to see out of your first round pick.
But how do they fit him in?
Exactly. That's the problem. So you're looking at another two first round picks coming up this offseason for the Raptors.
And that's your deadline argument.
And Joseph's had a really good year.
Joseph's been really good, especially defensively, and his shooting's gotten better. But the draft pick scenario, the fact that you have four first-round picks in the next two years, and Masai Ujiri's been on record saying, we're not really interested in developing more prospects.
Right.
That's where you look at the trade market and you think there will be a move coming up because you got these assets to trade. But it goes back to what we were saying, like how much are those picks worth?
I don't know. Like, but that's the thing. What is DeLon Wright? Like, do we have any idea? He's played real well in the D-League. He's got next to no run in the NBA. Now, Norm Powell's got a little bit, and we're learning a little bit about Norm Powell, and he looks real athletic, and he can get to the basket. Not much as far as shooting so far, but maybe there should be more with DeLon Wright. He was a first-rounder compared to a second-rounder in Norm Powell, but we don't know.
But, you know, like, he was picked, what, 20th overall, 21st overall? I mean, those guys aren't expected to step in and be big stars right away. I mean, it's so rare.
Unless you're Bobby Portis.
Right, yeah, a lot of people think the Raptors should have drafted. But, you know, I don't think the expectations were ever for DeLon Wright to come in and play 20 minutes a game and hold down that kind of backup point guard spot.
Well, but signing the Corey Joseph signing changed everything.
But even still, like, it would have been a terrible strategy to be like, oh, we're just going to draft a backup point guard late in the first round this year, and then we're going to be happy with that after Grievous Vasquez. You know, that's not an upgrade, that's a downgrade. So they got Corey Joseph, which is a good move. So I don't know, like, DeLon Wright, you getting at that he's a tradable asset? Because I think it's way too early to
make
that call.
No, I mean, maybe somebody views him, and I'm sure that NBA teams have scouts at these D-League games. They're getting reports on these young players and their potential. My one issue is I wonder if you're managing the young assets correctly, because they might be good. We don't know. They might have value. We don't know. This team, and rightly so, they play their best players a ton. Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan play like 40 minutes a game.
We're talking about the Raptors as like a top five team, as one of the better teams in the NBA. Their focus is on winning right now. Their focus is not in grooming players like 70% of the rest of the NBA is. You know, they're just in a different mindset, and that goes back to why it's likely that Ujiri will really try hard to move some of these picks. Because their priority is not developing DeLon Wright right now. Their priority is not making Bruno a part of their NBA
team. So those are assets.
Doesn't that make them all expendable?
You would think.
Are they assets in trades, or are they assets for your team in that you can put them in the D-League, you can groom the next generation of players for your roster?
How far ahead are you looking, though?
Yeah, right. Like, when do those guys ever arrive in the NBA?
So what's Joseph and Lowry locked
up? But, dude, it's sports. Like, how much changes in a year? Like, it's so hard to predict where this team's going to be in a year or 2 years. I mean, everything changed.
Isn't that why you have to go and try to win?
Yes. there you go. Now you got to it, Jeff.
You do, but... And you are winning. Like, congratulations. Yeah. You're there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you could be more there. You could be...
Look at the Blue Jays.
Right, exactly. The Blue Jays were there. They were two games out of the wild card spot.
There's no David Price available, and there's
Well, there are David Prices available, but the Raptors don't have the plethora of the, of whatever it took to get.
Because prospects are different in the NBA.
But let's pretend those prospects are just as, you know, the Raptors don't have those level of prospects. Like the guys who were traded for that price deal, I'm blanking on the names, but they were like blue chip stars.
Yeah, Daniel Norris.
Yeah, exactly. The 2-0 trade is the other one I'm thinking of in terms of the star prospects. Like you had huge prospects of major value, like a Jahlil Okafor, like a Karl Towns type prospects. And that's not what the Raptors are dealing with.
No.
No, but they can use the Mark Lowe's and the Ben Revere's.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what we've been saying the whole time. Yeah, yeah. If you're going to make a move, it's going to be for a Mark Lowe. It's going to be for Ben Revere.
Mm-hmm.
Not for Tulo.
Exactly.
I'd like to see them do something here as we approach the trade deadline. So big weekend coming up in Toronto when the NBA world descends for All-Star weekend, and Charles Barkley won't shut up about it. The guy loves Toronto.
Yeah, apparently he loves Toronto.
Yeah, he loves Rob Ford.
Rod Black.
And Rod Black and Rob Ford and everybody. So he'll be here. The NBA world's going to be here. Everybody will see what a great city Toronto is if they didn't already know it, but I'm sure most of them do, especially if they play in the NBA. They see this city.
Toronto has a great reputation among NBA players.
It's true.
Like it already does.
And Kyle Lowry going to be part of the three-point competition. I was kind of surprised not to see Norm Powell in the dunk contest. Not that he deserved to be there, but he wanted to be there. And you thought if they had an opportunity to throw a Raptor into the mix, it's not like there's big names out there. And no one's clamoring to see Will Barton, are they?
I am, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Will Barton is crazy athletic.
But maybe Norm Powell is crazy athletic, too. To think of what he can do in
dunk contest is mind-blowing. Norm Powell, I mean, you said he's not qualified. I forget the word you just used. But he's absolutely qualified to be in a dunk contest because he's an incredible contest type.
I'm surprised he's not there.
I disagree. I hate what they've done with the dunk contest.
No.
I want stars.
Hold on. We'll get to that in a second. Simmons.
Stars aren't going to go anyway.
But you know what? Actually, no, Simmons, you're right. And that's a part of why Powell's not there, because if you follow the NBA, Andre Drummond, superstar.
He's great.
Will Barton, budding star. Zach LaVine, crazy dunk contest guy. He's got to be in it. Aaron Gordon, crazy dunk contest guy. You're trying to build your stars. Norm Powell just isn't there outside of Toronto. The name recognition's not there. People just don't know who he is, so the NBA can't really justify putting him on that kind of a stage. I think with the dunk contest, what they're trying to do now is build stars through it.
But that is now like the secondary event. I don't know when it happened. Maybe it was like Steph Curry becoming Steph Curry, that the three-point shootout is the marquee event
of
Saturday.
Not for me. I mean, you talk about like entertainment value.
Oh, for
I don't
me,
think
it
it's
is.
There.
See, for me, something happened. I don't know when it happened, but something happened with the dunk contest where I've totally lost my interest in it.
Well, you got to get back onto it because what
last
we saw
year was
last
pretty
year
good.
Last
was
year was
return.
Good. I will admit that. But everyone gets a 50 now for doing anything.
Oh, yeah. That's
no, weird. No. Like, it had gotten too gimmicky, and I think it gotten too like relaxed almost. But last year, LaVine really did kind of wake it up again. And we saw like Oladipo had some good dunks.
Too many, no props. Like, get rid of the props.
And that was it. The Dwight Howard era. That did it for me.
That's what I loved about last year, though. It was a straight and simple, just like.
And you look at those Zach LaVine dunks.
Display of athleticism.
Yeah, you've maybe seen those dunks that Zach LaVine did last year, but you've never seen them with the authority
but,
and
like,
with
we're
the
not,
precision.
We're not seeing, Simmons, you're absolutely right. We're not seeing like Vince Carter. Like, when's the last time an actual All-Star has been in the dunk contest? It's probably Dwight Howard.
Yep.
And before
and
that.
He's the last center to win it as Andre Drummond enters this year.
And before Dwight, it was probably like Vince. I might be mistaken. I don't think Jay Rich ever was in an All-Star game. He was a really good player, but he was never an All-Star. And part of the thing is, like, I was talking to quick plug tomorrow on sportsman.ca.
This whole show is supposed to be a plug, so you don't have to make it quick.
Vince Carter, an oral history of his 2000 dunk contest. It was in our magazine, the last issue. It's going to be online tomorrow. Vince Carter is going to be on my podcast, Free Association, on Tuesday, talking about the dunk contest. We haven't seen anything like that since because there hasn't been the star power since. You think of him, Steve Francis, Tracy McGrady, Jerry Stackhouse was really good at the time. He was in that contest. You don't see those types of players now because I think they're just...
It's too much risk.
They're scared. Yeah. So Stackhouse was one of the guys I spoke to a lot for that piece because he was the guy who had the unenviable task of dunking right after Vince in that contest. And he's got some funny takes on it. But one of the things, you know, we started talking about the lack of star power today, and he mentioned like with LeBron, and I was starting to say how I see where LeBron's coming from. Like you said, the risk.
Yeah.
You get hurt or you don't win and suddenly like you're
blow
not superhuman anymore. Exactly. And his take was like, I will never understand how a guy like LeBron can't be in the dunk contest because he claims to be such a student of the history of the game. And if you look back on the history of the game,
yep.
the biggest names were part of the dunk contest.
To and never do it.
Yeah. So I don't know if we'll ever get back.
You see those on NBA TV all the time, the ones from the 90s and
in their
the
80s. In their like primes, yeah, Jordan, Dominique, all that kind of stuff. Dr. J back in the day, David Thompson.
That's what I want to see. Maybe I'm wrong, but
Kobe.
That's what gets me. I want to see the best guys in the league going at it.
Saturday is the more exciting day, though. Is anyone excited? Sunday will be interesting. It'll be Kobe Bryant's last All-Star game.
That's going to be overkill like crazy, but it's going to be...
it'll be historic, though.
No, it'll be cool to watch. it'll be fun to watch him try to take over that game, you know. Mm-hmm.
Well, it was like when Jordan was in it, right?
Right, right. It's exactly like that. So I wonder if...
set up the last shot for him?
Yeah, like exactly. You'll see a lot of that kind of stuff. The highlights will be cool. I mean, it's a fun highlight thing. What you hope with those kind of games is that in the last 5 minutes, an actual basketball game breaks out.
Right.
That's your best case scenario.
Yeah.
But it's going to be exciting, man. Like the players there.
Yeah. And I'm interested to get a sense of what the city's going to feel like for that week. Because we've never had anything like this. I mean, the celebrity game, it's going to be real interesting people watching. Who's going to be courtside for that game?
Exactly. Yeah.
What's going on Saturday? We've never experienced anything like this.
And that's the cool thing about the NBA, right? It's dominated by star power.
Yeah.
More than any other sport.
And people will be flocking here, like big names.
And that's why I think the All-Star game might be better than you think.
Like, who was it? I think John Sally told me that if you're an NBA player, that in your mind, Toronto is Las Vegas of the North.
Yeah.
Like, these guys...
Well, Jason Whitlock coined it White Vegas because of the snow.
There you go.
Even though there's no snow this year.
Yeah, there won't be any snow here. Which is fine. But the guys like that scene on like King Street, all these places where, you know, I don't have the bankroll to go to some of these like parties and clubs, but those places are gonna be flocking. I mean, I think it's gonna be a cool time in the city. You're just gonna see the whole NBA world descend here.
Yeah, and a couple of Raptors in the game as well. And one of them starting in Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan coming off the bench. It's gonna be a crazy, crazy scene. And we'll be all over it on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590
Sportsnet.ca.
And Sportsnet.ca. Yeah. We'll be all over it as well. Got the broadcast of NBA Saturday Night on Sportsnet as well. Coming up next, Connor McDavid's back, and he's doing a bunch of stuff. We'll talk about that. And we'll also get into some of our Super Bowl props and our picks for the big game coming up next. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Dave Zarum and Jeff Simmons. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
The latest issue of Sportsnet magazine includes a who's who of stars offering tips on how to be the best at what they do. Here's John Greig.
That's right, folks. It's our how-to issue, where the pros tell you how they do their thing. We've got Erik Karlsson on how to be the best defenseman on the planet.
Tatars back to on score! Well, he kept coming, and kept coming. Karlsson made a beautiful play. 1-0 Ottawa.
Greg Zahn on how not to tip your pitches.
Randy Johnson could not stop, and he couldn't make the angle of his glove consistent. He just couldn't do it for the life of him. I'm sure he knew that he was tipping, but he couldn't do it.
Tony Hawk on how to pull off a 900, P.K. Subban on how to celebrate a game winner, and James Hinchcliffe on how to get back in a race car when you've almost died in one.
That's the exit. And that was, you could put a hand in there on the dash. Like, that's how big it was. It was like my doctor had to have his hand in there to try and stop the bleed.
Those plus 15 more stories and tips from the pros.
That story and more can be found in the latest issue of Sportsnet magazine on newsstands now. And available on texture by next issue or by downloading the Sportsnet magazine app for Apple, Android, and Windows tablets and phones. This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the best sports talk on the planet on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Yes, I'm relieving. Now that you're leaving, soon as you can pay.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, yes, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis alongside Jeff Simmons, Dave Zarum until the top of the hour. It's a good time to be an Edmonton Oilers fan all of a sudden. There was a lot of excitement headed into the season. Died down fairly significantly when Connor McDavid went down at the beginning of November with that broken clavicle. But he is back, and back in a big way. They've won a couple in a row and putting up big goal totals as well. And Connor McDavid hitting the score sheet. And now, they're only 10 games back of that third spot in the very mediocre Pacific Division. Playoffs still probably a pipe dream, but Dave, this is now, this is what we expected at the beginning of the season, and it was just starting to become this when McDavid went down, unfortunately, in November. This is, expectations were for something similar to this, but not always do... Does the reality meet the expectation? Seems like it probably has in Edmonton.
Well, yeah, that's been the cool thing about the McDavid story for me, is the fact that how many times did these guys come in with this hype around them and they fail to live up to it? And it just makes you kind of resent the hype built around the next guy. So with all the McDavid stuff coming out, I mean, we had him on our magazine cover numerous times before he ever played an NHL game. And a lot of the feedback, you know, I would hear from buddies and whatnot was just like, hey, isn't this overkill? Like, there's no way this guy's going to be that good. And it turns out he is that good, you know, and that's the cool part about it. He's living up to the hype, which is already massive. Like, it's a LeBron Jamesian in the sense that, like, you think it's overkill, and it turns out it's not. And it must be a great thing for the people at Edmonton to have this guy to build a team around going forward.
And doesn't it change the overall philosophy of Edmonton as far as the rebuild goes? Because, I mean, there's been so much conversation the last few years with the number of first overall picks is that – eventually, you got to move on from some of these guys because it hasn't resulted in wins. Well, now you got these good young players who are playing with maybe the best young player in the last 10 years of this game that might be franchise-altering. It seems like you'd want to hold on to as many of those pieces as possible. Maybe, Jeff, you're not so apt to start trading away your Jordan Eberles, who now all of a sudden is a scoring machine with Connor McDavid.
Exactly. It changes the entire fortunes of the whole team. And they've stocked up so many of these picks, and they haven't gotten better at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just happy McDavid is back so they don't win the lottery again.
I'm sick
of that.
Yeah, I mean, it is stunning that they got him in the first place when you think about it.
Yeah, you're
less likely to trade Eberle or a Hall. Or now you have a core of something you can build around, because before they just seemed like a collection of talent that had no real path.
Yeah, no direction. Now you have,
it's kind of like
more.
The Clippers in like the early 2000s. Remember they had all those like first overall picks and
but none of those
candy.
None of those guys,
Corey Maggette. It was kind of like
Darius Miles.
Yeah, that's what it reminded
Clinton
me
Richardson.
Of. Richardson. And all of a sudden you get that actual
Lamar Odom.
Yeah, that's the team that they kind of had.
Yeah, but you were like, who's the alpha dog here? What's our style? And then you couldn't answer any of that stuff with the Clippers or with the Oilers. And McDavid kind of just helped sort it out. And the other thing is like, It was inevitable that I'd bring it to my incredible fantasy team, the Mary Pucksters. But, you know, I'm in this crazy competitive keeper league, and McDavid's a guy who is untradeable. Like, you can't offer anybody for McDavid, because it's not just how good he is, it's about the guys surrounding him. Like, he's surrounded by talent and young talent that's going to grow with him. So there's something sustainable going on in Edmonton. I don't know their goalie situation, but, like...
And part of that is, they keep cycling through goalies, and then they made a commitment to Cam Talbot.
Right.
Part of it is the style of defense that's played in front of them. It helps, though, when you keep the puck in the offensive zone and you put pucks in the back of the net,
yeah,
which
exactly.
They've done.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they have you're starting to see a formula for prolonged success in Edmonton, which was never the case while they were stockpiling these talented but maybe misfit guys.
All right, so it's Super Bowl weekend, Super Bowl Sunday going in Santa Clara at Levi's Stadium, Broncos and Panthers. We'll get to our picks for the game in just a bit. But, gents, let's look at the real interesting stuff, because I don't know, maybe I feel like your picks are going to be different, Dave, than Jeff and mine as far as how close this game is going to be. Might be more interesting to look at some of the prop bets for the Super Bowl. How about this one? How many times will dab or dabbing be said on the broadcast? Over two or under two, your two options there. Said on the broadcast is different than how many times he actually do the dabbing dance.
Of course, yeah.
I feel pretty safe about the under on that one.
Just because the old white guys calling the game.
That's right.
Don't really know what that is, and they're uncomfortable saying it.
Maybe they'll say it once, but I can't imagine they'd say it again.
The idea of Phil Simms trying to break down dabbing is horrifying.
Yeah, that's a good under just for that reason. Like, I would expect it to be over because everyone talks about it, but yeah, maybe because of who's calling the game.
This one kind of surprises me. Now, okay, the odds are they're heavily favoring the over on this one, but how many times will the Golden Gate Bridge be shown during the broadcast? Oh, it's got to be shown, right?
I saw this. What's the line?
The line's at a half, so all you have to pick is once it's shown, but you have to pay -350, which means bet 35 to win 10, whereas if it's not shown at all, you just bet one, you get 22.
Right, so it's terrible kind of odds, but or payday, however you say it. I'm not a big gambler, but that seems like just found money.
Right? How can the one thing is, the game, of course, is not in San Francisco.
Santa Clara?
Yeah, which is further away from San Francisco than I realize. It's over an hour away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's the San Francisco Super Bowl, right? Like, don't you have to show the Golden Gate Bridge?
That's the lock.
I was surprised it's only 0.5. I thought 1.5 would be a much better
line. Oh, yeah.
I've got a lock here as like while we're doing the broadcast type prop bets. Number of times Archie Manning is shown during the broadcast. The line is 1.5, so he's got to be shown twice.
And we have a pretty good history with Archie Manning, too, because his son Eli has been in a couple of Super Bowls recently, and I'd have to go back and do the research on that one, but that seems low as well. Like, just twice?
It seems way low. I mean, first of all, because they beat these storylines into your head while you're watching these games.
Right.
The second Manning does anything, he throws a pick, bam, they're going to go show Archie. He throws a touchdown, bam, they're going to throw Archie. They mentioned the possibility of him retiring. Bam, they're going to go show Archie. That one I like as an over.
Well, and along those lines, will Peyton Manning cry at any point during the broadcast? Yes, paying +600. No, -1200. So Vegas not thinking that he will cry. I think I'm along those same lines. He didn't cry after his first Super Bowl win.
I don't think he's going to cry.
Rex Grossman might have cried during that Super Bowl. I don't.
He doesn't seem like a crier.
No, he seems like robotic, right?
There's some people I can see crying.
Is Cam Newton going to cry if he wins?
He'll celebrate a lot.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't see that one hitting.
Okay, here's one.
All right.
This is who will the Super Bowl MVP mention first in their speech? And let me just run down the odds here. God, 2-1.
Mm-hmm.
Team, 2-1. The city / fans, 6-1. His coach, 15-2. Family, 15-1.
Teams first. I mean, I don't. Yeah, God's usually you're pretty safe. I don't think you're getting that with Peyton. You might with Cam. I think team either way is going to be first for either guy.
I get this one wrong every year. I can never figure that out.
Oh, yeah. You've bet on that one before?
Oh, yeah. It's always part of the Super Bowl prop sheet I hand out.
Right.
Whatever party I'm at. But that one's the harder. That one and the Gatorade are the ones I just can't
figure out. Yeah, okay.
Well, how are you supposed to know? That's just such a shot in the dark.
I always put way too much thought in it, and I'm always way off.
I think it was yellow last year. Orange is the favorite at 125.
But if you're the equipment manager or whoever fills those Gatorade
jugs,
isn't this just like a great way to illegally win a ton of money?
Yeah, I think it probably is. I feel like they have probably like some way of preventing that from happening. But
I guess so. But like the anthem one is another one where it's just like, if I'm the singer, I'm putting all the money on me going over, and I'm just stretching it. I'm just watching, looking at my watch the whole time.
Last one before we make a pick on the game. So Mike Carey takes a lot of heat. CBS's former official who breaks down the challenges one way or the other.
Right, right.
Will he be wrong about a challenge? Yes, +145. So that's the underdog. Yes, that he will be wrong. No, -190. There's been actually a number of stories written about Mike Carey's success rate during the regular season.
It's at
about 90%.
So the line is where it is for a reason.
Right, and it should be even more so, but the public perception is he's always wrong. But, Jeff, I would argue you should be more than 90% correct.
90% is not a good number.
No.
That means 10% of the calls are wrong.
Yeah.
This is the expert.
I'll go with Vegas on this one. Let me just toss one more out there really quick.
Sure.
Because this is a cool one. I didn't know that you could do this. Cross-sport props.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I think I know which one you're going to talk about.
Total goals in the Montreal versus Carolina game tomorrow versus receptions by Greg Olsen. Oh, I'm taking Olsen receptions there.
Montreal can't score.
Yeah, I like that one too. I like
because I think he's going to catch them. They're going to pressure Cam Newton a lot, and he's those tight end little short passes are always going to be there.
I thought you were going to talk about the Broncos win, Peyton retires, Spurs win, NBA title, Tim Duncan retires.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that one.
Paying, yes, plus 2,000, so odds not exactly in your favor if you go for that one. I'd be shocked if Peyton retires on the field if they win this game.
That's a prop bet, too.
That is a prop bet. I think he's going to milk it, probably.
Right.
And we'll find out a little bit later on. He might not even retire. I'm not 100% convinced. All right, so the line's what? About 6 points in this game. We'll make a straight-up bet. And a pick against the spread, if it's any different. Dave, who you got?
Just because of the value in the pick as well, and because of what we were talking about in terms of the defense and the Broncos' chances getting better in a close game, and I expect this to be a close game, I'm taking Denver.
Both? I'm taking straight Denver. Up and with the, yeah, with the points, obviously.
Yeah.
Jeff, who you got?
I've been trying to think of ways I can pick Denver, but I just can't come up with them. I think Carolina's got too many mismatches, and I don't think the line can block. So I'm going Carolina against the spread, and I'm going Carolina to win by 10 points.
I'm going to do a little differently than both of you. I'm going to try and middle here. I'm going to take the Panthers to win the game and the Broncos to cover that 6 points.
A close game would be awesome.
Classic Ennis.
Yeah.
Total middler.
Yeah, I like to middle. Thanks, gents. That'll do it for another edition of Sportsnet Magazine Live. For Jeff Simmons, Dave Zarum, I'm Ben Ennis. This is the Sportsnet Radio Network.